Paper 30, section 4. And we're into that section a ways. It's old single column, page 342. And it's that subsection on the Super Universe Wards, subsection number 5 in section 4. Okay, so, I mean, if you flip back to the beginning of the section, remember what we're up to here? We're doing a little thumbnail sketch of sort of the relatively common elements of the ascension scheme. You know, biased a little bit to what we'll experience for obvious reasons, since the book is in my lap and not on some other planet in another local universe. You know, they gave us another list of 7. So we have this, you know, another fascinating sevenfold pattern through the circles of Avona. And we made it through the first 4. So in other words, we made it from a mortal world up through the whole Marantxa career. So now we're ready to embark out as a first stage spirit. And that's where the story begins then, as being a super universe ward. So going from, I mean, obviously a local universe is within a super universe. So in a sense, the whole time you were ascending as a Marantxa being, you were also in the super universe. But remember, they're called universes for a very definitive reason. There's a high degree of self-containedness to a unit that's called a universe, one turning, literally, in Latin. And then on top of that, for a very immature, relatively speaking, local universe like ours, we're a long, long ways from actually being fully accepted into the super universe proper. We're a long, long ways away from having the local universe being settled in light and life, where they, really the boundaries begin to fall in many ways in terms of administration. And, you know, you really do become part of the super universe, even while you're ascending through the local universe. So those people that are ascending in those later stages of a local universe, you know, have a very different experience. But for us, it's a whole new environment. We'll be making this big transition from everything that we'd finally gotten very used to will be in the rearview mirror, and we're going to have to start all over again on getting acclimated to a whole new way of doing things, a whole new experience of ascension. Not just because we're a spirit being, but because we're in this totally different environment. We're now plugged into the next level of mother mind presence up, the next level up in the hierarchy. You're not using the creative mother spirit's mind anymore. It's going to be a very different experience. You're going to have to get your sea legs again. all right, but, you know, here they just give you this little thumbnail sketch. We touched upon some of these issues back when we were reading about the various levels, as you recall, back in the cosmology papers. But they want to retouch on it here. What we just finished reading, you know, they haven't gotten to yet, because that's in part 2. So now it shifts gear, and now you should be thinking back of what we've gone through in past months here. All right.
5 super universe wards. All ascenders arriving on the training worlds of the super universes become the wards of the Ancients of Days. They have traversed the Marantxa life of the local universe and are now accredited spirits. As young spirits, they begin the ascension of the super universe system of training and culture, extending from the receiving spheres of their minor sector in through the study worlds of the 10 major sectors and on to the higher cultural spheres of the super universe headquarters.
Okay. You notice they, even though they just said it in that last paragraph that we read last time about the Spirit confirmation. Remember, we made a point of speaking about that a little bit, talking about that a little bit. So they're reminding you that now accredited spirits. So, besides the obviousness, to say it again, of us being first stage spirits, so that makes a lot of sense that you're quote unquote an accredited spirit. All of the other beings that might be ascending with us, besides ascending mortals, also have a new status. Say they're a seraphim. There's a level of accreditation, a level of integrity to those ascending seraphim now that wasn't there before. They've gotten an upgrade by the Creative Mother Spirit so that they can go outside of her mind womb. So they're plugged in to a higher mother now than the one that gave birth to them, you might say. Okay, so you have all these beings are ascending with this newfound integrity. And even though you're a long ways from actually being on university, right away you're a ward of the Ancients of Days. So the Ancients of Days are very definitively ruling the whole sort of extra local universe environment. And so it doesn't have quite the flavor of hierarchicalness, definitive hierarchical separation of levels like it did down in the local universe. And you just see that the way they're talking about, how they just, in one sentence swept you through from minor sectors through major sectors to the super universe capital. So just the way they're talking about it is trying to give you this sense that it's it has a much more definitive wholeness to it. When we talk about the whole and the individuality of the whole is the Paradise Trinity. And this is a definitive Trinity administration now when you're in the super university. So that just goes without saying. It's going to be more holistic, if you will, there. Now, just one thing, I can't remember if we brought this up when we were going through the minor sectors and the major sectors back in the cosmology, but you really are reminded of it here. And they say, okay, so you go to your minor sector headquarters, and then the 10 major sectors, you got to go through the study worlds of all 10 major sectors. Just think, literally, spatially, about what we're talking about. So you have the pi wedges of the Milky Way disk that are those 10 major sectors. If you have to go to all 10 capitals, obviously it would be kind of silly for them to be building those capitals way radially far out. This is because, it's going to take you a long time. So, just geographically, obviously those major sector capitals must be, relatively speaking, closer in, so that you probably have kind of a ring of them. And that would make sense, too. You'd have those established very early on, and then the outer reaches, of all the major sectors are getting developed subsequently. I'm sure they're not, really close in, as a circle around Uversa, but, relatively speaking, they need to be fairly close in. So that you don't spend just as much time going from one major sector capital to the next as you do studying on the capital. This would seem odd, okay? Because now that we're thinking about the whole super universe, we've gone to a huge scale. When we look out the darkest of night skies, go out in the middle of nowhere, and get a very dark night sky, and all the stars that you can see with your naked eye, those are all within the local universe, basically. Okay, from our perspective here of looking up, gazing on that seemingly infinite void, it seems gigantic, but it's really, relatively speaking, very small, in the scale of the super universe. And we'll see that as we, talk about going to Havona here in a little bit. We now have very, very huge scales that we're dealing with. Tens of thousands of light years every time you turn around, okay? And that's, even if you're traveling at three times the speed of light, that's starting to get to be some major time. So, so keep that in mind. It's just, even though they never specifically say it, it's pretty obvious that they must be relatively, close to the center so that you can go around all 10 of them. And one other thing on that, remind you again what we mentioned about why there's 10 and why you have to go to all 10. You have each super universe is one phase of the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. You have the unity of Avona downstepped sevenfold. So you have one flavor of unity in a super universe. And you always have the tenfoldness of individuality. So the associativity of from 1 to 10 is tenfold. You have 10 different flavors of associativity, and hence your mindedness in some way too, that's a little mysterious. Because it's not like you have 10 different mothers, for each of those major sectors. They're not universes. But there is some sort of difference in the way mind plays out in each of the major sectors. The fact that you only have one mother for the whole super universe, that's reminding of you how definitive that tenfoldness is. You can have one unity, but if you change the individuality endpoint, the associativity is going to have a distinctly different flavor. Now I can't explain to you what that flavor difference is, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, but it's there nonetheless, something that we'll discover. We're going to, we're going to first get our first taste of having to really expose ourselves to significantly different selves when we start going to those other major sectors. They're going to be others that are more other-like than we've ever experienced before. Kind of getting you used to that, because like they tell you, when you get to Avona, then you really experience other. Beings that have minds that are so radically different than anything you've ever experienced that, you can't imagine initially that they could even be coming from the same first source and center. It's like you're from an alternate universe somewhere or something. They're going to be so different. And they are, technically. They're from another super universe, right? They have a totally different flavor of unity that they've been striving up to for eons. These different flavors of unity are disjoint. There's no overlap. So you start to get a taste of that when you're going through the major sectors. And notice the similarity. What happens, in that individuality, associativity, unity in the local universe, the associativity level, the constellation, that's where you have all that socialization. You have all these definitive individuals, and you have to learn to come into, a common identification with that which is above you so that you can come into association, because at eye level, you're very different. So you have to reach up and grab something that you can have in common that's above you. See, in that middle level, again, you're doing the same thing, individualized associativity unity. Again, you're challenged in those 10 major sectors to establish a new higher level of socialization with ever greater and more different individuals. Okay, same pattern, individuality, associativity, unity. All right, let's go on here.
There are three orders of student spirits in accordance with their sojourn upon the minor sector, major sectors, and the universe headquarters worlds of spirit progression. As Marantia ascenders studied and worked on the worlds of the local universe, so spirit ascenders continue to master new worlds while they practice at giving out to others that which they have imbibed at the experiential founts of wisdom. But going to school as a spirit being in the super universe career is very unlike anything that has ever entered the imaginative realm of the material mind of man.
Okay, see. Notice that they knew they needed to put that in there. you know, us poor little humans are trying to wrap our minds around this incredibly long, complex, vast ascension scheme. And it's starting to sound a little bit daunting and maybe not that compelling even, because it seems to be like nothing but education, and they call it an educational regime, and they're trying to remind you, you can't even remotely, you know, see, it has ever entered the imaginative realms, okay? You can't even remotely imagine how amazingly, fantastically cool it's going to be, okay? It is so completely different than anything you can imagine, and yet it's education. You know, you're going to be very different. It's going to be very amazing. You know, all they can do is occasionally remind us of that, and tell us to hold on to that. Hold on to what you know it's going to be amazing, and then just try to bring in courageously this recognition that in the midst of the cool unity that you'll be immersed in, there will be a ever greater individuality that you'll be able to handle fine. You'll at this point, you're beginning to just relish it. You can hardly wait to get to a vaster world. And see, notice how they said how they worded that. So spirit ascenders continue to master new worlds. See, not master new relationships, just saying master new relationships with new individuals, but more and more, the planet and the people are, you know, have this harmony that is just beyond our imagination. And that's the significance of saying world instead of planet. If you just say planet, they're just, you know, there's the thing that beings stand on. You know, it's a more matter-of-fact word. World implies peoples. And more, you're heading towards those Havona worlds, like we've talked about, where power and personality are not at all distinct like they are now. You know, I would never mistake a couch for a person in this room. But what's it going to be like in Havona?
Watch where you step.
Right. I mean, it's just going to be so amazing to be immersed in an environment that, where everything seems to be alive from your old perspective. You know, you have to have a higher sense of livingness to distinguish the beings from the things. And that's what, of course, what's happening. You're getting this higher and higher personal consciousness that can discriminate all the more definitively, and you're more amazed by how personal personalities are when you see them at a higher level, and then at the same time you don't see things so superficially. They have a much more dynamic character to them, nature to them. You can, in a sense, you know, relate to them in their full three-dimensionality, inner and outer. And okay? Yeah.
You know, as a being, we, in crude way, look like who we are. You can, you know, sort of see and recognize that.
You'll see that in just a few paragraphs here, they're coming up to a reminder about that inner life, outer life, you know, difference and how that's evolving. And just you know, one other little point about that the kind of mind that you have, like I was saying, when you're engaging things at this higher level, more and more you see things as the motion that they are. You know, when I look at that cup or that table, it doesn't look like motion. It's sitting there just completely motionless, it appears. It's because all I can see is a superficial, you know, nature of it. I don't see it. I don't see through it, and I don't see deeply into its nature either. But the more my mind is a high motion, and the more I can experience the fullness of matter as a motion, that's what I mean. It's everything is going to become so dynamic. Your experiences are going to be so dynamic. There just won't be, you know, right now when they say that the Isle of Paradise is the only thing that's motionless, you go, well, I don't know, that table hasn't moved. You know.
Don't tell the guy what it's moving.
Yeah, you know, but an angel, you know, if an angel's in this room looking at that table, you know, they don't experience that table as so motionless like that, so static. They experience it in truer form, more dynamic as it really is. So, you know, we'll begin to have that. Remember the first word that they use for the kind of higher consciousness, even when we get and we're working through the imagined world, is moda for the type of consciousness, and that's Latin for motion, okay? So just keep that in mind, you know, that there just won't be anything static about your environment. Nothing will just be sitting there as a blob, you know, especially when you finally get to Havona.
You mean keep
yeah.
that in motion?
Yeah. Yeah, it'll just be, yes, keep that in motion, in mind, yes. it just, you know, to try to sum, you know, when they say, you know, beyond your imaginative realms, but try to do that. Try to inject that now into your perspective that it is emotion. Know that and know that it will just, its stasis will melt away as you ascend. And you'll just be in this incredible dynamic. I mean, more and more you'll appreciate how space is a thing, and that motion, you know, is not just of things within an empty container. The space and the things are, you know, the space is part of the motion that is the things, you know. And so you're just become immersed in a full dynamic environment.
Question: when you say emotion here, mm-hmm. I mean, I sort of go immediately to thinking, okay, looking at the atomic structure and electric structure and how that's broken down and the things inside are moving so quickly. Is that what you mean in a way, or something different?
No, I mean those little billiard balls in what you're picturing. You know, little electrons. Say, I mean, the electron itself is a motion.
Even though it's made up of 100 ultimatons that are motion too.
And each of those ultimatons is a motion.
Is a motion.
See, you can never get down to something where you now have finally a motionless thing that moves. There is no such thing. The most fundamental
energy is a motion.
Yeah, I mean the primordial force, the four shards of space, is a motion. Everything is a motion. There's only one thing that isn't a motion: the Isle of Paradise. Everything else is a motion. Everything.
Not far from emotion.
Either. Yeah, right. See, that's why, right. I mean, obviously, you know, that's why we use that word, you know, because we feel there's a motion in our mind that's getting manifested physiologically. Where it's an outward E, you know, that's EX. You drop the X before the M, okay? That's out. You're taking the motion of your mind and you're expressing it out physiologically. That's what emotion means. A feeling becomes a motion, okay? See, so that it's just, anyway, not to belabor that, but just challenging yourself to let go of the old static physics. You got to let go of the old static physics. It's not true. The universe is inherently dynamic because there's the first source and center of all things and all beings, and our God is a living God. If you're going to make some physical thing at the core of everything be static and dead, then the God that gave rise to it has to be dead. There is no deadness in God. He's fundamentally dynamic. He can't make something that is motionless. And that's why technically to say that even the universal creator created the isle is, you know, I mean, they came into existence together, okay? Right. I mean, right. If you're going to think about it at all, right. So, okay. Let's see. So, all right. So let's see. What else do we have there? Let's see. Oh yeah. Right. Just the reminder. Since they reminded you, I'll remind you again too. Remember, you've got first stage spirit, second stage spirit, third stage spirit, for the three levels in the super universe. You're a first stage spirit, the minor sector. Second stage spirit, major sector. Third stage spirit at the super universe headquarters. And then into Havona. You're still a third stage spirit on the outer circuit of Havona. You become a fourth when you graduate to the sixth circuit of Avona. Okay, so 1, 2, 3 stages of spirit for the three levels. All right.
Before leaving the super universe for Havona, these ascending spirits received the same thorough course in super universe management that they received during their Marantia experience in local universe supervision. Before spirit mortals reach Havona, their chief study, but not exclusive occupation, is the mastery of local and super universe administration. The reason for all of this experience is not now fully apparent, but no doubt such training is wise and necessary in view of their possible future destiny as members of the core of the finality.
Okay, notice that they felt they had to do it again, but not exclusive occupation. See, they know we might be feeling a little bit claustrophobic about this. It's like, that's all I'm going to study is administration. from here to eternity, literally, from here to eternity. Okay, yeah. They keep, trying to help us. Don't worry. We read about even like star students and, there's all kinds of things that you're going to be doing. But in terms of that core course that everything is playing around, it's about learning to function side by side with the rulers at each level, so that when you're at the constellation level, finally, when you actually are on Adentia, as an Adentia, a citizen of Adentia, you're going to help the Most Highs be Most High. Okay, basically as, a quasi-equal, okay? And the same way, when you finally get to a Uversa, you're going to do stuff rubbing elbows with God, with the Ancients of Days. They're going to give you responsibilities that they normally have to do, but now that you're finally there, they can hand it off to you.
Glad you got here.
Yeah.
So,
obviously you're going to be very different, and you'll be able to handle this. But they know at this level it's going to sound a little bit dry and daunting, so they keep qualifying it there. Let's see. Anything else in there? You notice that they. Their possible future destiny. You're going, isn't it definitive now? Aren't I? Like, remember, there's a few other things that can come into play, like, getting snatched out, by the Paradise Trinity and, becoming, one high in authority or something. There's some other options that are in play here, but by and large, you're heading towards the mortal core of the finality. Okay.
The super universe regime is not the same for all ascending mortals. They receive the same general education, but special groups and classes are carried through special courses of instruction and are put through specific courses of training.
Okay, so they did it again, right at the end of a section. Notice that they're wanting you to pick up on something, so they're hinting. Remember how up there they made that point of... saying that ascenders will progress individually from one sphere to another and from one phase of life to another, but they will always advance from one stage of universe study to another in class formation. So when you were down there in the local universe, they were telling you that there's still a pretty significant groupness, group phenomenon happening. But the higher you go, the more individualized things become. Because the higher you go, the more you're able to manifest personality. So the more absolutely unique you, even on the outside, in terms of your relationship to others and the environment, becomes more and more unique. Less and less groupable in a lot of ways. Now, there's always a course of study and stuff that's in common. But as soon as you can manifest more personality, you begin to put that to use by doing things that other people can't do. Okay, so they're stressing that. See, as you go up now at the super universe level, they're saying that you're starting to get some more individualized education happening. You're becoming more and more individuated. You know, the more that what the personality is identified with, the more spirit-like it is, the more that spirit pattern can really individuate that. Instead of, well, it's got some non-spirit stuff in it, and that's all six and one half a dozen of another, and that makes you, to that degree, like another. But more and more, you know, you can really set yourself apart, because what that personality is identified with is more and more encompassable, and hence uniquely personalizable, differentiated, you know, and differentiating you from others.
Yeah. Here's my memory. Is your guardian angel still with you?
Yes. Yes. The pair, you know, both the pair is both with you. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we're.
They morph too.
Yeah, I mean, remember, they got a big morphing, like I just said, when they left the local universe. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't look at it like they used to anymore. They got seriously transformed by the creative mother spirit.
Through some of these classes.
And they're going through, because you know, some of them may actually end up in the core of the finality with you. See, so they've got to have pretty much the same, you know, process that they've gone through. Yeah, and we'll mention, you know, the variability with the Destiny Guardians here in just a little bit. Okay, so just know that's, you know, just, you know, when you see that, that's sort of little size, like, oh, they want me to connect that with the other one. What pattern are they trying to get me to recognize here? And you notice they just don't come right out and say it. They're kind of just hinting it. They want you to see it. You know, that even though you're going from the individuality level to the associativity level to the unity level in terms of the levels of the super universe, as an individual, you are individuating more. You have to, because if you're going to be immersed in that high level of unity and not be diffused to the four winds, you need to be more like the rock. You have to be able to stand within that so that unity energy doesn't just diffuse you to nothing. You're literally immersed in this. This isn't just a concept that you're going to be learning about unity. You're immersed in it, and it's pulling on you, wanting to diffuse you into unity. But you stand unmoved. You're a rock of individuality now. So much so that when you finally are ready to go to Voni, you can jump into the deep end of unity and maintain your integrity. You're that personality encompassed now. There's no cracks where unity can, you know, suck you out like a straw, okay? Okay? You're rock solid. Got a solid encasement of you, personalized you, that's holding yourself together.
And don't you go from individuality to associativity to unity again once you're from Havona up?
Well, in Havona, it reciprocates, because everything reciprocates across the boundary between time and eternity. So there, you start with the unity as your foundation, and you move up through a new transcendent associativity, you know, to a full individuation, you know, there, see, it's starting to become kind of abstract. We'll speak to that in just a second here. Remember what starts to come into play here. When you get up that high, the thing that you're striving now towards is not just unity, but it's that power personality synthesis that is the supreme. Okay, so that you have a new kind of a ceiling that you're striving to individuate yourself within. Because when all is said and done with the grand universe, you have to be able to stand integrous as an individual in the midst of that final act of the Almighty Supreme taking a hold of everything, but you're not going to get swallowed up inside of the body of the Supreme Being when that happens. Okay, you'll be able to stand in the midst of that as it goes, okay, and it's all within the Supreme Being, his body, okay, And you didn't get sucked along with it, you know, like an undertow.
It's your mind that's being held, isn't it?
Yeah, and
see, evolution of mind.
See, and that's the thing. See, you, the reason I'm saying it like I was about how, you know, unity wants to, you know, suck you out and spread you to four corners. I mean, remember, you have an energy self. You know, and we're talking about spirit energy. We're talking about energies that just do their energy things. If you're going to stand in the midst of very profound spirit energy, you have to put a casing around yourself. You have to hold that your energy together with your personality, because the other, you know, because that energy that is yourself came from that, you know, environment. It was collected out of that environment, and in and of itself, it wants to go back, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It wants to go back into the pool, into the reservoir. You know, unless you hold it together, it will. Okay? I mean, we see that very literally with matter in the second law of thermodynamics. You know, it literally does the ashes to ashes, dust to dust thing. You know, once you don't have mind holding the form, the matter diffuses back into the background. Right? And, you know, here, all you need is a little mind to stand, but more and more you're going to need personality, and mind is not going to be that. You're going to need spirit energy holding on to the mind, and personality holding on to the spirit energy, because you got to keep it all together, you know, and not let any of it go back into the background.
It's true. I read somewhere that some scientist was making the point that there was no explaining why our bodies last as long as they do, that just being material such as they are, they ought to disintegrate sooner.
Yeah, you know, and you're going, yeah, duh. I mean, it's so trivial. I mean, think about how ridiculous it is that everyone thinks that all you need is matter for me to be sitting here each week. I mean, everyone knows that if I die 3 days later, you don't have anything that you can sit on this couch anymore. I mean, matter does not maintain itself at all.
Not without some polymers.
You know, what's holding this form, right? You can encase me in epoxy, you know, but you know, that's the thing. I mean, you know, and they say, well, we've carefully studied, you know, what's going on in your hand, Chris, and it's all obeying all of the physical laws. Yes, you know, but what's telling it to hold that form? There's no physical law that says make fingers. Okay, that's not one of Newton's laws. That's not, you know, that's not in string theory. That's not even in quantum mechanics. Okay, what physical law says make fingers? Who's telling the physics and the matter to do this? You know, it's not overruling the physics. But it's putting a boundary around it. Do what you do within this boundary.
And
something.
Don't disintegrate.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and see, you know, it cannot disintegrate by doing what it can do. But see, it doesn't do that naturally. I mean, see, to think about that, I mean, built within the nature of the physical laws is a direct ability. The mind can direct it without changing the physical laws. It can direct it to hold a body together. I mean, that's kind of an unrecognized potential, see, in the laws of physics. That they don't manifest that potential in and of themselves. If you pour marbles on the floor, they don't pile themselves up into a pyramid. Okay? But they can be piled up into a pyramid, and if you do that, did you violate any physical laws? No. But they don't pile themselves up. But they can be piled. Just notice that inherent in matter is the ability for it to be used by mind to greater ends. It's part of the way God made matter. He made it so it could be used. You know, and you can take it to just the simplest thing. You don't have to do body stuff with it. Just literally the fact that you can make a pile of marbles, and there's no law that you know, that demands that. It just, matter just has that ability. Coincidentally, you know, matter has the ability so that when primitive mortals get to playing around with it, they can make bricks out of it. That's not an accident that matter can be made into bricks. That's part of its design. Everything. You can take fabric and make it into, you know, cloth for this couch. That's not a coincidence. Matter was designed so that humans could make clothing and, you know, and upholstery
stuff
and couch arms. And I mean, it's designed so that we can do that. You know, the real clever person is not the one who designed that tripod. The clever person is the God that made that matter so that it could be turned into a tripod one day. That's foresight. Long, long, long before there was any mortal, God made matter so that it could be built into tripods. Okay? Et cetera. Okay, a couple things here.
Chris, you're piling up the marbles. Mm-hmm. I've heard this analogy how many years back,
right.
But it just made me chuckle. And then I got an insight. It's like, because you've been, in our class we just finished, you know, you were making the fine gradation between, you know, what's purposive and what's just controlled by matter. Mm-hmm. Matter goes toward gravity. It does have a movement of its own, but it will go towards gravitation. Mm-hmm. When you pile the marbles up, that's resisting gravitation. That's resisting the gravitation of matter.
Yeah.
Everything personality does, maybe, resists, shows that there's a resistance to that matter, like anti-gravity
right.
or something.
Right. You know, and just make sure that you appreciate that no matter how fancy, you know, the pile of marbles is, like my body, you know, no physical laws are being violated. There's no there's no overruling of physical laws going on here. The physical laws are being used. They're being purposed. That's all you're doing. You're using, you know, lever force and muscles and whatnot to pick up something. And you know, you're not violating any physical laws when you build a house. Okay? But houses don't build themselves. Yeah? And they definitely don't design themselves.
Yeah.
And they don't sell themselves either.
So we must be talking about mechanical mind that is keeping all these structures in their different patterns.
Sure, I mean, where the rubber meets the road is the mechanical mind.
Okay,
yeah.
So I had somebody sent me a video of an old World War II experiment, and I think it was a video from the Nazis, where they kept this dog's head alive by keeping the heart pumping or something, and the dog could lick its lips and eat and look around, and it was just the head. And that's when it kind of dawned on me that was mechanical mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mechanical mind has a lot of inertia to it because it's the most it's the most matter-like, it's mechanical mind. So it has the most inertia of the mind energies that we talk about. So just like when you get a ball rolling, it keeps rolling. You know, you get mechanical mind doing a certain thing, and it will keep doing it for a long time. It has a lot of inertia, matter likeness to it. You know, and that's very helpful, so that your higher mind can kind of get the mechanical mind going in a certain direction, and that just kind of keeps it going. It doesn't have to constantly sort of be at it. Inertia is a very handy thing. You can, and it'll. Yeah, I'm belaboring this, but I can't resist. A simple example of how much inertia mechanical mind has is the phantom leg syndrome or phantom limb syndrome. You see that? You know, you have mechanical mind that's conforming to your matter. You chop off, say, the lower half of your leg, and for a long time, the mechanical mind holds the form that it had. You know, it doesn't instantly reform. And so for a long time, the person who doesn't have this lower limb anymore, you know, can feel, you know, they can wiggle their toes, you know, they can put shoes on their artificial limb, they can move their toes, feel the top of their shoe, you know, if they tie their shoelaces too tight, they literally have to loosen them because it hurts. Okay? I mean, it's, you know, there's a literalness. But after a while, finally that mechanical mind reforms, and then, you know, it's not there anymore. And it's because it has so much inertia, see? You know, but long before that, you know in your agitated mind that you don't have a leg. It's not like for a long time you're delusional and think, you know. See, your agitated mind is not doesn't have so much mechanical inertia like that, see? Yeah.
When you were talking about the fingers,
mm-hmm.
it made me think, I was always so fascinated with embryology. But when you think about the fact that an embryo has a bud, and this bud then develops into an arm, a hand, and mm-hmm. fingers,
mm-hmm.
and what drives that?
Right. See, all of that early stuff is driven, of course, very obviously by mind. You know, what takes what something that's spherically symmetric, you know, the initial single cell, you know, and then, you know, and early on as you have multiple cells, it's still basically a spherical blob, you know, but eventually it starts to take form. I mean, what's imposing form on that? See, mind imposes form on the matter. That's the key thing. That's the part of the picture that all of the materialists are ignoring.
They
reject the notion that there's anything besides matter because they say, I can prove that there's no physical laws being violated. Yes, but the form. You're ignoring the form. Where does the form come from? Okay? That's the thing that they're purposely ignoring. All right. Let's go on to the Havona Pilgrim. You know, you can see how quick that was. Zoom, zoom, zoom. You know, we're third stage spirits, and we're done with our spiritual preparatory school on the Super Universe headquarters, and we're ready to go into Havona. Okay.
Six Havona pilgrims. When spirit development is complete, even though not replete, then the surviving mortal prepares for the long flight to Havona, the haven of evolutionary spirits. On Earth, you were a creature of flesh and blood. Through the local universe, you were a Marantia being. Through the super universe, you were an evolving spirit. With your arrival on the receiving worlds of Havona, your spiritual education begins in reality and in earnest. Your eventual appearance on paradise will be as a perfected spirit.
Okay, so I'm just giving you that little sweep. I don't know if there's anything we really have to bring out there, other than, you know, we were kind of talking about this, you know, Maria, you know, right there at the beginning. Notice how they're using the language that is, your spirit development is complete, even though not replete. See, and that's in the sense of, see, you've completed the part of the journey where the ceiling that you're striving for is just, you know, the unity of spirit. So you completed that. But now you're going to strive for that unity as it is fully harmonized with within the triunity, you know, that is supremacy. So, you know, you're still striving for unity, but not sort of in this pure form anymore. And so that's the difference between complete and replete. You're going to develop a relationship with unity again, replete. But now it's not going to be separated like it was before. Now it's fully integrated within the triunity of individuality, associativity, unity, matter, mind, and spirit, you know, if you will. That what you're striving for is that high, you know, in relative terms, transcendent unity that's within the triunity. You know, it's not unlike what you begin very early on. You leave here and you begin right away to not have the distinctiveness between science, philosophy, and religion. You begin to engage those rather than as three separate things, but as a harmony. You know, that's, you know, moda, the system of harmony here on the bottom line of the chart. You know, that's what that moda is. It's super philosophy. It's everything that science and religion is, and super additively to make philosophy encompassed. Okay. See, so you start this very early on, and here you're just doing it at a very, very high level. You're achieving an individuality relative to this. very high harmony, you know, or if you will, the unity within that harmony. Yeah. Okay. All right, so more here.
The journey from the Super Universe headquarters to the Havana receiving spheres is always made alone. From now on, no more class or group instruction will be administered. You are through with technical and administrative training of the evolutionary worlds of time and space. Now begins your personal education, your individual spiritual training. From first to last, throughout all Havana, the instruction is personal and threefold in nature, intellectual, spiritual, and experiential.
Okay, so here you see the third of these three reminders about you now have this very definitive individuality that can be in Havana, in the unbelievable unity that is Havana. Okay, well, go ahead.
I have a question. When they say alone, they just don't mean in class, because would sometimes you do go with your guardian angel as well? They just don't mean you're doing it in a class form, right?
Well, okay, are you talking about the very first sentence there?
Or, yeah, it's always mean alone, right?
Right, I mean the journey.
The journey.
Okay, they mean you as an individual graduate from Uversa and go to Havana, as opposed to, you know, you're on the seventh mansion world, and you in a class, the whole class graduates and goes together. Okay, that's what they mean by that. But we're going to, you know, I don't want to mention the angels. They're going to bring up the angels in a second. There's a little, you know, there's something that comes in about the angels. We'll get to that in a second.
I'm just talking about the meaning.
But yeah, but that's the deal, that it's you graduated rather than a class graduated. Okay, and so now, even though there's still a whole bunch of things that every ascender does, you know, has to learn, you know, in Havana. There's a commonality there, but everyone has to learn that common thing uniquely, because you're very, very personal now. Okay, that's what they're getting at. It's just impossible to instruct two of you at the same time anymore. Because you're so personal now, you're so unique, so distinct, that to bring you into relationship with that knowledge is a unique process. And of course, it's reciprocal. I mean, when you come into relationship with that knowledge, there is something added to the universe that can't be added by anyone except you. Not only do you receive, but the whole universe receives the super additive consequence of your relationship to that you come to know. And that's the only way that can come into existence. You know, and from a finite perspective, that part of the Supreme, see, comes into existence when you develop this personal relationship with whatever it is that they're teaching you, that's different from what another person brings in. You know, there's a different part of the Supreme that results from their coming into relationship with the same thing. Common thing, totally different super additive consequence now. Okay? So you're very, very personal now. And we finally have gotten to the third place in the book where they give you this triplet. Intellectual, spiritual, and experiential. So notice the very first thing they tell you, you get into Havana, and for some reason, the first thing out of the relator's mouth is they say intellectual, spiritual, and experiential. We saw the same thing back in, what is it, paper 14, isn't it? Yeah, in paper 14, you don't have to go there, but you get to life in Havana in paper 14, and the exact same thing happens. The very first paragraph, they're going to explain life in Havana, and out of the revelator's mouth comes, on the seven circuits of Havana, your attainment is intellectual, spiritual, and experiential. That's the first thing out of their mouth, basically. It's like, okay, they're trying to say that there's something significant here. What, you know, not only that, I don't know if you may remember, I think you were even reading that night, John, as I recall, when we got to going through the circuits of Havana with the Supernafem, okay, we got to did the first step with the Pilgrim Helpers. And sure enough, one of the very first things they say to us is that, actually, let me read that whole paragraph because it feeds into the other stuff we were saying. There is a definite requirement of the Pilgrims of Time on each of the Havona circles. And while every pilgrim continues under the tutelage of Supernafim, by nature adapted to helping that particular type of ascendant creature, the course that must be mastered is fairly uniform for all ascenders who reach the central universe. You see that part? See, it's a uniform, set of things that you're trying to come into relationship with, right? Like I was trying to say before, but you do it in a very unique way. And then they say, see, notice, it's just like the paragraph we just read. They said that, and then they said, this course of achievement is quantitative, qualitative, and experiential, M-dash, intellectual, spiritual, and supreme. Oh, they gave us two sets of three. They mixed it up a little bit. Okay, when you read that, as I recall you were reading that night, I said, spend some time reflecting on those two sets of three. Because there's an interesting little thing they're trying to give you. Especially if you notice the other two times they say intellectual, spiritual, experiential. But here they split it up, and give you more complexity. What is it that they're trying to tell you? It's related to what you brought up, John. Like I said, they're about to bring this out. Because now it's very definitive what's going to happen when you get to Havona. This whole bit about striving up finally to this very high unity that is achievable on the super universe headquarters, okay? What that means in terms of this is you now have the ability to have a complete inner life phenomenon. You got the inner life fully ramped up and turned on. And your ability to relate to the outer life fully ramped up and turned on. Okay? Because the intellectual, your mindal self, that's your associating mechanism. Your mindal self is your associating mechanism. It's what links the inner life to the outer life. The personalized self to the external world. Okay? So then they say intellectual, spiritual, and they say, okay, you've got the associating mechanism fully up and ramped. It can fully engage the outer life. And spiritual, you have the inner life fully ramped up. Or in other words, you have a quantitative outer life and a qualitative inner life. Okay? You now have those fully in play. Now you can do the super additive consequence, bringing the fullness of an inner life into relationship with the fullness of a potential outer life. And the super additive consequence is what you mean by experiential, experience, supreme. See, intellectual, spiritual, supreme. What's the experiential deity of the finite? Okay, the supreme. Okay, experiential, supreme. Like I said, see, that's what you're now attempting to do. You're striving towards greater and greater relationship to supremacy. Okay? You're trying to achieve the super additive consequence of a full inner life with a full outer life. And so when they say, how did they word that? Now begins your personal education, your individual spiritual training. When they say things like that, it's finally now possible to really get into this super additive consequence. It's taken you this long to really achieve the kind of an inner life that can relate to what God has made. That external world. An infinite God makes a very complex external world. Okay? And a little mortal on a world like this can't even remotely begin to relate to what an infinite God has wrought. Okay? So we think we have this incredible inner life. We're so spiritual. Okay? We're not even, if we were spiritual, there would be a super additive consequence that would be significant. Okay, I mean, it takes you all the way to Uversa to really achieve the kind of self, personalized self, that can relate to God's world, God's domain, God's external world. Okay, and you're going to do that now. Okay, and it's going to have a super additive consequence. You're going to begin to get some real significant supremacy stuff happening. After all, on the sixth circuit of Avona, you're going to have the first real milestone of that. You're going to come into a realization of supremacy on the sixth circuit of Avona. And it's only when you have that definitive literalness of supremacy within you that you have any potential to relate to one of the absolute persons. To relate to absolute, you have to be supreme or ultimate. You can't be finite or absentite or co-absolute. You have to be that personalized fact. The supreme, you know, made personal. I mean, the finite made personal, supreme. The absentite made personal, ultimate. The co-absolute made personal, absolute. Okay? So in order to go on the fifth, fourth, and third circuits of Avona and find, you know, the third person, second person, first person, you can only do that once you have some relatability to an absolute person. You have to have some supremacy. And you can only get that as a super additive consequence of finally getting a full inner life developed and finally being able to relate fully to the outer life. So what's the microcosm of that here? You know, you're trying to develop a definitive material pragmatism and a definitive spiritual idealism. And you're going to get a super additive consequence, even in this life, called cosmic consciousness. Okay? That's why you should be, you know, if you're studying this revelation, that's supposedly why you're studying it. Because you're attempting to discover cosmic consciousness through relating to the fifth epical revelation. That's what it's here for, to foster your development of cosmic consciousness. To do that, you need to bring a genuine material pragmatism, a genuine relationship with facts in the outer life, into relationship with a genuine spiritual idealism in the inner life. You have to bring those two together into a true relationship, a super additive consequence of cosmic consciousness.
Just answer the question.
Oh, okay. That's the point of studying it. If you're studying this book to merely get spiritual consciousness, it's not going to be very effective. Because that's not what it's designed for. It's designed to cultivate your cosmic consciousness. The fourth epical revelation was designed to cultivate your spiritual consciousness. Okay? This is super additively beyond that. And the only way to get this is to not only have everything that Jesus tried to cultivate, that genuine spiritual consciousness in you, but you also have to have a science. You have to have a genuine relationship to facts in the outer life. You don't have to be an analytic person, but you have to have a genuine relationship to facts in the outer life. And it should start here, and it's coming to its fruition finally when you've entered Avona. Because you can have this full relationship with facts in the outer life, you can finally get this super additive consequence thing happening of supremacy. Okay, so that's so they've scattered this, you know, this little tidbit, see, throughout these passages about Havona. And they talk about the central universe, and then they talk about you going through the central universe. And here, when they're giving you a thumbnail, the three spots, they want you to put those three statements together and then think this through and understand how this works. All right. Yep.
As we faith contemplate the Father more and more, deeper and deeper into the, you know, total deity, mm-hmm. aren't we going to start spontaneously seeing things in the environment we just didn't see before? Because we had such a constricted view of reality? In other words, those mind patterns, we're opening up those mind patterns that, you know, the senses receive.
Well, be careful about saying automatically or spontaneously too easily. Because remember, you know, the three times they said intellectual, spiritual. Mm-hmm. Okay, the faith contemplation of the Father, okay, is going to get you that spiritual. That's the one consecrate, consecrating your will to the perfect will of God the Father. But what? Don't forget about the other consecration. It's not just spiritual, it's intellectual and spiritual. You have to consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother. Because only then are you going to be able to have a genuine relationship with the outer life. Otherwise, you're going to be so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. We know how what happens to a human when he fixates too much on the existential, on the Father, on the spiritual, you know, on the will. I mean, you become so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good.
Yeah.
You gotta.
You just say, as long as you're alternating them, you don't stay up there and bliss out like you're talking about.
Right.
You know, like the Eastern people do. They stay up there and they bliss out, and then they lose touch. But right. If you go up for brief periods, like the book talks about, mm-hmm. and then you just get to a point of worship, and you can't take anymore. You gotta go, you know, do something very practical. You gotta interact with the environment.
As we grow, see, we take that initiation from the Father, and as that initiation has consequences and we grow, what we find is less and less do we have to alternate between the two. Less and less do we have to go apart to be spiritual. More and more we can be spiritual in and stay engaged with the facts. And the more you can get to that point where you don't have to go apart to be with the Father, as it were, you know, the more you can have a super additive consequence, the more there's a potential for cosmic consciousness to begin to happen. You know, using your three cosmic intuitions in the moment, you know, not just using your spiritual insight, your third cosmic intuition, when you're apart, to know that you're a child of God. Okay. All right. So, then this is really fun, this next paragraph.
The first act of your Havana career will be to recognize and thank your transport Sakhanafim for the long and safe journey. Then you are presented to those beings who will sponsor your early Havana activities. Next, you go to register your arrival and prepare your message of thanksgiving and adoration for dispatch to the Creator Son of your local universe, the Universe Father who made possible your sonship career. This concludes the formalities of the Havana arrival, whereupon you are accorded a long period of leisure for free observation, and this affords opportunity for looking up your friends, fellows, and associates of the long ascension experience. You may also consult the broadcasts to ascertain who of your fellow pilgrims have departed for Havana since the time of your leaving Uversa.
Okay. So... there's formalities. you have to kind of chuckle at those. It's like, I mean, I got to write a letter to the Creator's Son. Oh, man. Can't I just play? yeah, it's kind of funny. But
he's just going to get lost in the deal.
but nonetheless...
I think that would be a great honor.
Oh, right. I think it's going to be, right. Can you imagine?
We're looking forward to it.
Right. See, and, you know, think about, see, at this point, you're writing more to your brother than your father. Mm-hmm. I mean, see, at this point, you can really start to not just treat Jesus as your brother, but treat Michael as your brother in a way that, you know, you never could before. You have perfection of purpose now. You have something really in common. You've got your first measure of perfection. In order to get into Vona, you had to have perfection of purpose. You had to have perfected that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father. And so now you share that in common, that perfection with Michael. And you write him as your father friend, your brother friend. Yeah. So it'll be really cool. You know, this whole bit upon whereupon you were accorded a long period of leisure for free observation. I mean, rather, you know, the reason they have to do that is because for a long period of time, your mouth is just hanging wide open, okay? And you're pretty hard to teach when you're like that. Yeah, you know, you're just agog. You know, you just imagine how long it's going to take you to not be agog as you're walking around your first Havana world. It's going to be so ridiculously amazing. You know, you'll just be stupefied and unteachable for a while. So they give you this, you know, time to acclimate, and, you know, come into relationship with the amazing
letter in, you know.
distracted. Yeah, they probably, you know, kind of, you enter in a small room, so it's like, you know, it's like, okay, I can deal with this. I can deal with this. I'll write a letter. And I'll, you know, then they open the door. It's like, ah! Holy cow. All right, so, and then, you know, think about that last sentence. You know, think about the practicality behind that last sentence. You may also consult the broadcasts to ascertain who of your fellow pilgrims have departed for Havona since the time of your leaving Eversa. Okay, now if you aren't thinking very, you know, precisely here, that's going to seem like a kind of a weird statement. Okay, but remember where you just went from to. You left Eversa at the center of the super universe, and you landed on the pilot world of the seventh circuit of Havona. I mean, a very conservative estimate is that you just went 300,000 light years. I mean, it's 250,000 just to get out of the main, you know, disk proper. And you got to give at least maybe, you know, 50,000 light years for a boundary or something. Okay, I mean, it's at least 300,000 light years you just went. Okay, that took you 100,000 years at three times the speed of light. You've been in transport for 100,000 years at least. So, yeah, there could have been a lot of things that have gone on. You know, a lot of people might have left Eversa in 100,000 years.
And you should tip the cabbie, too.
Right, well, that's the first thing you do is say, thank you for, you know, keeping me safe for 100,000 years and through the dark gravity bodies, you know. Well, you know, they tell you it's 250,000, you know, basically the size of the super universe proper, you know, where the local systems are. And you're going to have some boundary on the inside before the dark gravity bodies. You can't be too close to the dark gravity bodies. That's going to be too disruptive. So there's got to be a pretty significant boundary there. You know, it's at least 300,000 light years, maybe more, you know, maybe quite a bit more, you know, but it's at least 300, you know, so it's at least 100,000 years.
It seems odd to me that the speed, that three times the speed of light would be the same in the local universe as it would be for transporting from the super universe to Havona.
Again, all this, all the angels, high and low, that's their speed limit. You know, I mean, you know, remember, it's how much relationship to finite space and time you have. You know, there's no difference in the finite space and time in the local universe as there is in the super universe. I mean, it's all the same finite space and time. You have this same slightly transcendent relationship to that finite domain that allows you to have an effective speed of three times the speed of light. Okay, and that's just what it is. Now, when you're a finaliter and you come back out, okay, now things are different. Okay, now we've talked about this. I mean, you know, what assumptions can you make? It's like, well, you probably can't assume that you can do the solitary messenger sort of speed as a finaler. Remember, you can transport yourself. You don't need a transport angel anymore when you're a finaler. So, you know, you can go zipping out from the central universe out to, you know, some other super universe on your own. I mean, how long would it take a solitary messenger to go 300,000 light years?
Unless you can get in the autogestor.
I'm going to point out here, I mean, how you can think about how, I mean, how long would it take a solitary messenger to go those 300,000 light years? That's kind of a, you know, unless you go instantaneously like a gravity messenger or something, I mean, that's kind of this, how quick could you do this instead of 300,000 light, or 100,000 years, this 300,000 light years? Less than a month. A solitary messenger does that 300,000 light years in less than a month. Yeah, because they're going 4.5 million times the speed of light. Okay. Probably, you know, the best guess would be that, you know, you can do, because you're taking an oath to the Paradise Trinity, you know, to become a finaliter, you have this definitive relationship to the Trinity that you're literally, you know, taking an oath to, you know, you're probably in the speed range with the Trinity origin beings, like the Divine Counselor, you know, or Universal Censor, that sort of thing. Okay, and, you know, they're about a seventh the speed of a solitary messenger. So you could go those 300,000 light years in under a half a year, under 6 months. Okay. So a lot less than 100,000 years.
That's from the outer circle.
Well, I mean, it's just like, you know, yeah, right, yeah. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you think about this inside of Havona. That's very confusing, you know, because you're kind of transcendent there. But you know, to get out to some other super universe capital, you know, you could do that in under half a year. So it still takes, you know, a little while, but that's, you know, that's well within, you know, negligible range compared to 100,000 years. Okay?
A couple things. Mm-hmm. For a quick question, I forget. Are you asleep on this transit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, what to pack, right?
But the driver was awake the whole time.
Yeah. And you better hope that your primary Sakanafim is wide awake when you get to the dark gravity bodies.
is that, you know, they talk about this, you're out here alone and everything, but you still have buddies. Mm-hmm. You still got friends. I mean, the people, you know, I mean, it's like,
I mean, think about how many friends you're going to have by this point. I mean, it's going to be legion. You know, just, I mean, good grief. So that, you know, just keeping that in mind, when, you know, that's why they say that, because 100,000 years have gone by. So, you know, you're not only going to want to check on how many of your friends have left, you versus since you left, but you want to kind of touch bases on, well, what's, you know, been happening in the super universe of Orbiton over the last 100,000 years, you know?
Yeah. While you were asleep.
Yeah.
What?
Yep.
Before rebellion.
All right, yeah, let's get some more here.
The fact of your arrival on the receiving worlds of Havona will be duly transmitted to the headquarters of your local universe and personally conveyed to your seraphic guardian, wherever that seraphim may chance to be.
Okay, so tiny little paragraph gets got this separate thing. And notice it came up in separate questions. See, and that's why they have it separate period. They know we're going to ask this, and so they want you to figure this out. Okay, so remember how this works. We talked about this when we were kind of going through the ascension before. When you leave Uversa, your pair of destiny guardians first go to Seraphington. Okay? Independent of whatever they might do subsequent to that, I mean, instead of going to Havona like you do, they go directly to Seraphington, and they do the whole sevenfold thing on Seraphington. That's the first step for all ascending seraphim, okay, destiny guardians or whatever, okay? They all go to Seraphington. And when they're done with Seraphington, many different possibilities come into play, and that's why they're, you know, saying it the way they are, wherever that seraphim may chance to be. Okay, some of those, like, let's just keep it to destiny guardians. Some of those might actually come to Havona and basically follow you through the Havona regime. Other pairs of destiny guardians may come to Havona but not follow you, but have a different kind of parallel sort of regime that they go through. And then you both end on paradise together. Some of your destiny guardians may not go through Havona at all. You may not see them in Havona. You'll get back to them when you get to paradise.
Seraphington
is one of the father's worlds in that first circuit around the Isle of Paradise.
Not too far from Divinity.
Yeah, and Ascendington and all those, yeah. All right, so, see, in a sense, they're kind of skipping over the seven Havona circuits. They're jumping into Seraphington.
How long that takes
them. Right, and all this, you know, the geometry of this, of course, you know, we can't even think about because they haven't, we can't think about absinthe geometry. So, and what the relation, what the effective speed is, and, you know, we don't know anything about any of that. So, but anyway, that's why they say that. So, you know, depending on, you know, how this is all playing out, you know, they could be in various places. It depends on how long it takes your particular pair of Destiny Guardians to do their thing on Seraphington. Some may, you know, may take longer than others, and et cetera. There's going to be all kinds of variability. So
these messages, yep. You think they go by their reflectivity so they don't text anywhere near as
You know, remember, there you're definitely, you know, you have the grid stuff. You know, remember when we talked about the tertiary Supernafim, they're the ones that are handling a lot of that communication grid stuff. So, not necessarily is it going to be reflectivity for all these things. I suppose it depends on, you know, how quickly it has to get there and whatnot. But Yeah, and so that's another thing. We don't know about the speed of the non-reflectivity communication grid. You know, they don't, you know, we don't know if we're supposed to think about it like in Star Trek. Is, you know, is it like subspace, you know, frequencies, or, you know, or quote unquote, you know, what exactly, you know, are the, is its relationship to space and time? You know, it's, it has to have some pretty definitive, you know, relationship that we're, you know, it's, because that's why you have the reflectivity mechanism, so that you can overcome that. So it's, there's a slowness to it, but how slow, you know, it's funny they don't at some point say, you know, that it goes at the 3 times the speed of light or something like that. They don't tell you. If I had to guess, I don't know, I might be inclined to be biased toward something like that Trinity substrate sort of stuff, you know, where it's, but I don't know. I mean, it's a little hard to know how you're supposed to think about. I mean, the fact that you have literal localized conduits, see, says that it can't be too fast, because if it was too fast, it wouldn't be so localized. It would be.
But it must be faster than so, travel.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's, well, I mean, probably not as fast as a solitary messenger can travel, probably, though, see.
Thanksgiving. Probably not being hand-delivered.
Yeah. But so, anyway, all you can do is really kind of speculate about that, unless someone can notice something in the book I haven't seen yet that kind of gives a clue about that. All right, so, yeah, so that, so your seraphim have this, you know, much more complicated path, because remember, the real big difference is they don't have father fragment, you know, they're never going to have a thought adjuster, you know, but a father fragment, you know, they don't get that until, you know, the final step, if they're going to go into one of the cores of finality. So there's a lot more of this sort of gradual accumulation within the wholeness of the mother that has to go on to get them consolidated. They didn't get this kind of nugget handed to them that was sort of coalesced that we have. All we have to do is just try to come into relationship with it. You know, they have to build that and then come into relationship with it. So there's a more complex process to it for them.
The ascended mortals have been thoroughly trained in the affairs of the evolutionary worlds of space. Now they begin their long and profitable contact with the created spheres of perfection. What a preparation for some future work is afforded by this combined, unique, and extraordinary experience. But I cannot tell you about Havona. You must see these worlds to appreciate their glory or to understand their grandeur.
And that's why I spent as much time as I did trying to wave my arms around and get you to kind of think about something really different about Havona. Because when all is said and done, the last thing he says is, okay, you really can't even remotely explain this to you. I mean, it's so beyond your imagination what you'll experience, not only because of its difference, but because of your difference there. It's just totally non sequitur for you right now. So just let it always be just out of reach in your imagination. Let Havona be that place that is always just beyond what you can imagine. You know, and just hold that thought all the way to Uversa, and it'll remain true. Because even on Uversa, you can't imagine Havona. Okay?
So, however,
yep.
Isn't Havona really the pattern for everything that's out here?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So there is something to be said there. The more you experience out here, maybe the more you
sure
have part of that pattern, and that's probably one of the reasons why you have to go through all the worlds.
Obviously.
Check out all the patterns.
Right. I mean, you have to have something that's relatable to that. But it's just the reason it's not even imaginable, even on Uversa, is because it's not that pattern is not expressed horizontally. It's downstepped. See, so you get all the way up to the heights of Uversa, and you're looking at, you think, I'm really high now. You know, Yeah, but Havana's still up there, and it's good. Okay, it was way, things were way downstepped to this level that you think is super high. No, that's downstepped. You have no idea what it's going to look like when you get up to a higher level. So.
Yes, I have a question. Yep. That night that you were waving your arms and everything and stressing us all out with that things are going to be moving so fast and quickly, we were going to have to be like...
Yeah.
Exploding with activity.
Yeah.
Where did you find that in the book?
Oh well, you can see. I just find it by appreciating all these things together that I read. I mean, why am I saying it here? Just think about what invoked me. What words in these passages invoked me to say these things again tonight? If nothing else, that last sentence. Okay. You don't just go, ooh, it's like all mystical or something. You know, that isn't the way you interpret that last sentence. Try to understand why that sentence is in the book. It's like, okay. So in other words, it's very, very different than what I experienced right here. So then think about what you experience in this room. Except for my hands waving randomly about all the time, most everything else is pretty stationary in this room. Just think about the basic experience of this room. Okay? See, just try to penetrate to the core of your experiences now. What's the fundamental elements of your experience right now? Why do scientists believe that the fundamental nature of all things is that it's a universe of matter? It's a universe of little static blobs. It's because that's the foundation of our experience here. So, if, what's there in Havana is not even remotely analogizable to us, it must be basically the antithesis of our common experience right now. Well, what's the opposite of everything seems to just be blobs, and if you expend a lot of energy, you can get one of the blobs moving. That's our experience right now. Okay, if we burn a whole bunch of chemicals, we can get a rocket off the planet. And if I really muster my ambition, I can get myself out of bed in the morning. And okay, I mean everything is like this. It's just blobby. Okay, so the antithesis of that has to be just complete unleashed motion. That we've never experienced that. That's why they can't. It's like we can't even begin to describe this. You try to imagine something moving really fast. Well, what if there isn't something that you can point at that's moving? What if there all of that just becomes a continuum of dynamic pattern? Yeah. there's just nothing in our experience like that. All right. Finally, though, we're going to get to paradise.
Seven paradise arrivals. On reaching paradise with residential status, you begin the progressive course in divinity and absonity. Your residence on paradise signifies that you have found God and that you are to be mustered into the mortal core of the finality. Of all the creatures of the grand universe, only those who are father-fused are mustered into the mortal core of the finality. Only such individuals take the finaliter oath. Other beings of paradise perfection or attainment may be temporarily attached to this finality core, but they are not of eternal assignment to the unknown and unrevealed mission of this accumulating host of the evolutionary and perfected veterans of time and space.
Okay, so if you think about why they said the things they said together in that paragraph, basically what they said is, we don't know anything except the following fact. We know that all these beings have this very amazingly transcendent element at the core of their being. That the fundamental nature of that father fragment is beyond any author's imagination in the revelation. So it's not surprising, they say to themselves, that all they have is random speculation about the future of such a being. There just aren't they don't have other examples of like, well, here we see another father-fused being that we've known for trillions of years and we've got that all figured out. No, this is uncharted territory. They can't even look to an Ancient of Days or an Eternal of Days or you know, or anything like that. I mean, none of those beings have father fragments at their core. Some of them are God. See, so, you know, it just goes hand in hand that they emphasize that this is the common thing. The mystery of mysteries is the common element that makes these beings called finaliters. And hence, anyone who presumes to know what that implies, you know, is doing just that, presuming. Okay, so that's all they can really say. The mystery of mysteries means it's unknown and unrevealed, the mission, you know, of these beings.
Secret of ascending.
Right. Well, I mean, there's other things that are secret of ascending, but, you know, but it's just...
Oh, I'm sure.
Right. So I mean, in a sense, part of you is the secret of Divinington, and no one can see. Now, not even you know that. Not even you can land on Divinington. You know, see. So.
Masters are pure spirit and pure energy. There's not. What else can?
Right. There's just so many things that are just not understandable. So, so that's what I see. All they're really saying. Now, notice the one thing they remind you of there in that first sentence. The progressive course in divinity and absonity. You're going, well, wait a minute, I'm still a finite being. Why are they saying absonity? The higher you get in your ascension, the more that your insight is always transcendent of your consciousness. So right now, if I use my three cosmic intuitions, I'm accessing an ability to know things at a higher, at a transcendent level of where my consciousness actually lies. There's my sight, and then there's my insight, which is transcendent. The insight is always transcendent. So when you start to get up to the higher reaches of consciousness, the higher reaches of sight, of, you know, what the horizontal level that you're seeing on, the transcendent insight is going to start to play with the lower levels of transcendence, literally, of absonity. Okay, so that's why, and in order to become a resident of the Isle of Paradise, you have to have a relationship to the absolute existential level in the inner life. Okay, so, to become a resident of the Isle of Paradise, you have to have a relationship to the absolute existential level in the inner life. And as a consequence of that, you're going to have the first measures of relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life. If you didn't have some relationship to the supreme experiential level in the outer life, you couldn't experience anything on the absolute aisle. So remember, it takes supreme to tie to absolute, like I was saying, you know, beginning of the evening here. So you have, see, both in the inner life and the outer life, you have some pretty high things, at least in their first little measure, tiny little measure. So if you reach above that, in that... transcendent insight domain, that level that's always above where your self directly is, it's going to begin to touch upon absonity. Okay, there's a couple spots in the book where they, you know, remind you of that. That, you know, and well, it's like, well, okay, that makes sense that far. But technically, how could I possibly have any relationship to absonity, even if I'm got my head crammed up against the ceiling of the finite? You have three dimensions, absonite dimensions of your personality. Right? You don't just have three finite dimensions. You have three absonite dimensions and one absolute dimension. That absolute dimension is allowing you to have this relationship to the absolute existential level in the inner life, you know, in its full form. See, and that fact that you have three absonite dimensions of your personality means that in terms of that transcendent insight, you can begin to very directly begin to pull in a transcendent absonity consciousness that gives you an insight. Okay, it's not your consciousness yet. You know, well, that won't be until you're a seventh-day spirit and all that. You know, but
So a question, you know, remember, this talks about father fused are the only ones who are mustered in.
Right, right.
Now, there's, what, 90%, 95% or 99% are mortals. Forget what the other guy.
So you want to skip to the beginning of the next paper already?
I'm not reading it yet. I'm just trying to remember.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking ahead.
It's 90.
But my point here is that those people are those other ones that are, you know, are they father fused by that time? Or are they not father fused and therefore not permanent members of the
court? No, I mean, for instance, for anyone to get on in a fine alder court, any fine alder court, you've got to be father fused. Okay? So if you're a Havona native and you're going to be in the mortal fine alder court, you got to be father fused. But you have to be father fused even if, you know, if you're going to go into the core of Havona finaliters. I mean, the finaliters are father fused.
Now, seraphim that join it become father fused.
They're father fused if they, you know, if they're in the finaliter core. Yeah, all the beings, or like if it's a gravity messenger. I mean, it starts out literally being a father fragment. Okay, see, everything there has a core of a father fragment. That's what the finality, like I said, that's why the
not
first.
Not necessarily a thought adjuster, but a father.
Right, not necessarily a thought adjuster.
Right.
But definitely a father fragment. Yeah. You know, and how many different flavors of father fragments does it take to make all these? You know, who knows? But
what about the spirit fused?
They don't make it there. The spirit fused mortals stay back in the local universe, they don't ascend above their local universe headquarters. Or the sun fused stay in the super universe. Now, there's an asterisk next to that. Some of the spirit-fused mortals and some of the sun-fused mortals get upgraded so that they can go beyond the local or super universe. But in general, you know, they stay. All right. Let's see. Anything else there? No, I think that's it. Okay.
Paradise arrivals are accorded a period of freedom, after which they begin their associations with the seven groups of the primary Supernaphim. They are designated paradise graduates when they have finished their course with the conductors of worship, and then, as finaliters, are assigned on observational and cooperative service to the ends of the far-flung creation. As yet, there seems to be no specific or settled employment for the mortal core of the finaliters, though they serve in many capacities on worlds settled in light and life.
Know the feeling. Yeah. Can we throw that in? I'm unemployed.
Again? you know, and of course, I mean, again, the reason for that that there's nothing settled is bit because now you really are in many ways of the next age. Right. We talked about that with the creature trinitized sons. There's a high degree of that with them. So much of what they are by nature is of the next age. So they do a few things that kind of have to do with relating the supreme being and supremacy down into the finite. They start to kind of work the other, you know, turn around and work the other way. Remember, that's, in terms of you, there's those two halves of your finite career. The first half, you're getting to paradise. You're God the Father seeking. Second half, you're God the Mother revealing. Okay, when you think about the Supreme, you have the upwelling of the Almighty and the downwelling of the Mother. See, just the fact that you describe it that way, if you're God the Mother revealing, you're going to be more of this downwelling phenomenon, trying to bring the higher down into the lower. See? Okay? All right, so so let's see. So see, what else do we have here? Let's see. Oh, yeah, I mean, just the fact that, you know, it's kind of funny when you see when they have finished their course with the conductors of worship. Okay, just, you know, notice that that's another reason why they kept kind of help us with those helper phrases back earlier. You don't want to be that period with the conductors of worship to be called a course, do you? But remember, it is. I mean, all seven of those primary supernafim, there's a very definitive course, and they're teaching you something very definitive. I mean, yes, when you learn what you learn from the conductors of verse, if you have this incredible, sublime experience of unhindered worship for the first time, but you know, they're more than what they're doing is not just so that you can worship. What they're doing is giving you the finishing touches so that you can be that which can take an oath to the Paradise Trinity and become a finaliter. You know, as a wonderful corollary of that finishing touch of your nature, you can now worship, but that's, you know, the worship is not an end in itself. Okay? So there is a course to it, and it's the finishing touches. Let's see, what else do we have there? And just, you know, that last thing to emphasize, why I was saying that you can tell how top-down this is. You know, when you talk about worlds settled in light and life, you know, or, you know, greater units of the universes getting settled in light and life, remember how they tell you that the Supreme Being's primary assistants are also engaging those, you know, the elements of those universe of universes that are settled in light and life. See, you're kind of getting into that regime. You're starting to be part of the antecedent following. So it's just like I was saying earlier on, as you're ascending, you're getting to levels where in a sense, you're starting to work hand in hand with a being that at one point in evolution was thought of as God. Like during the Adamic, post-Adamic age, you know, God is revealed up to the constellation level. The Most High is God, you know. And then one day you're working side by side with God. You know, now he's not technically God. But, you know, here you're getting to the point where you're now beginning to work hand in hand with those gods of the supreme domain. See? They can delegate supreme God responsibilities like that to you. And you can execute them perfectly. That's why, you know, when the revelators are thinking like that, and that's why they're saying, so what on earth are these finaliters going to be doing in the next age? I mean, what kind of hand-in-hand relationship are they going to have with the Supreme Being? I mean, if already, almost immediately, as finaliters are starting to kind of work with the Supreme Being, you know, at least those unqualified supervisors of the Supreme, those assistants of the Supreme Being. So, and they're called unqualified supervisors. They're not circumscribed. I mean, they're the full-on assistants. See, so that's why the revelators are so amazed at, you know, what must lie in the future. Oh, and I'm amazed. That reminded me. We forgot to mention. Paradise arrivals are accorded a period of freedom. Again, the same thing. You get all the way through Havona. You finally can keep your mouth, you know, from hanging down. And then you arrive on the Isle of Paradise, and it starts all over again. It's like, and so they got to give you a period of freedom to acclimate there too. And you go, I wasn't here before. I know I've been here 3 times, but no, I wasn't actually. You see, I mean, we talked about that. You had so limited experiences those 3 times when you were there. Right. You know, you experienced the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, but you didn't experience paradise. Now you experience paradise, and it's quite the deal. All right.
Unless, of course, it's been drilled into you that it's not cool to seem amazed. You should be very
reserved.
Yeah. 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 Yeah
that's the way teenagers are now. They're either totally amazed or they're too cool to be amazed.
I mean, considering that it culminates in letting it all hang out with the conductors of worship, I think it's okay to, yeah.
It's okay to be a Gog.
Yeah, to be a Gog.
It really is a Gog.
If there should be no future or unrevealed destiny for the mortal core of the finality, the present assignment of these ascendant beings would be altogether adequate and glorious. Their present destiny wholly justifies the universal plan of evolutionary ascent. But the future ages of the evolution of the spheres of outer space will undoubtedly further elaborate and with more repleteness divinely illuminate the wisdom and loving kindness of the gods in their execution of their divine plan of human survival and mortal ascension.
The little subtext there is notice the author. Okay, a mighty messenger. The mighty messenger is sort of saying, okay, even if all they do is kind of work at the same level that I work at, that's still way cool. But you know, the flip side of that, even though the mighty messenger, you know, was snatched out of the core by the Paradise Trinity and sort of put on that constant plane, no longer is growing, you know, it made it very, very much a stationary sort of a phenomenon at that very high plane. Because he no longer experiences growth, he doesn't so immediately see and hence know experientially that there's a huge mystery in store for him at the end of the grand universe, being settled in light and life too. I mean, you know, everything's going to change. So, you know, like they point out, some of the beings obviously are going to continue to function within the super universe level to maintain it as part of this now expanded eternity domain. You know, the central universe kind of being expanded out to include the seven super universes. Obviously, there's beings in Havona that are still maintaining it in a way at least similar to what it was like before there was the super universe level. I mean, the Eternals of Days are still the Eternals of Days, for instance. Okay, their assistants have changed and stuff. But you know, an awful lot of the beings are not going to be needed in the seven super universe, at least in the mode they're in. I mean, maybe they're still going to be working with ascenders, say, but now it's absentite ascenders. So, I mean, they have to at least be lifted up to a higher level in order to minister to absentite ascenders. So, you know, they're not going to stay. I mean, there's not going to be any finite things going on anymore once you have the Supreme Being. So, you know, between the lines, your heart kind of tugs, you know, a little bit for the mighty messenger, because he's kind of looking at the finaliters and, you know, and he's saying, well, you know, they're pretty much working with me right now, but I know that they're going to definitely go on. It's like, you're going to go on too. You've got a future too. It's kind of an interesting little kind of poignant paragraph, what's between the lines there. Because of, you know, who the author is. All right, so let's just wrap it up here.
This narrative, together with what has been revealed to you and with what you may acquire in connection with instruction respecting your own world, presents an outline of the career of an ascending mortal. The story varies considerably in the different super universes, but this recital affords a glimpse of the average plan of mortal progression as it is operative in the local universe of Nebadon and in the seventh segment of the grand universe, the super universe of Orvantan. Sponsored by a mighty messenger from Uversa.
Okay. Just a couple little things there. You know, so that the very last thing, they remind you of what they said up front. Don't forget that there's a lot of variation, especially when you go outside of Orvantan. Like we stressed, so they're reminding you that in the bottom line again. And there's even a lot of variation when you go from local universe to local universe. So, you know, that's going to be really fascinating to be able to get beyond the limits of this revelation and begin to know a little bit more about all these different variations. This is kind of an interesting little self-referential spot in the book relative to the fifth epical revelation itself. See, this narrative, together with what has been revealed to you, okay, now that part is not only referring to the things that have been said prior in part one, but at the same time that part one is coming together and getting completed, part two is coming together and getting completed. And there's, you know, more about the ascension scheme there. So they kind of treat those parts one, what all it says about the ascension scheme in parts one and two are kind of treated together there. And then, and with what you may acquire in connection with instruction respecting your own world, the stuff that comes in part three, okay? Not to mention occasional things in part four, too, right? But, okay, so it's, I wanted you to understand what, you know, why he's saying it that way. Because remember, in terms of the bulk of what's in front of us getting put together, parts one and two, the foundation was laid in 34, and then there was a few little tweaks beyond that. Part three, it's 35. See, so there's a little bit of secondariness, you know, to that, and that's why it's said, you know, and with what you may acquire. See, that's why he's kind of speaking in the future tense there a little bit, because of what's going on with part three is a little bit separate from what's going on with parts one and two.
So when they talk about, it's different in different universes, mm-hmm. Do you think they mean that the whole ascension plan is different, or do you think it's the way they go about it is different? In other words, you think those people from other universes must also, you know, go through their capital and,
Right. I mean, Grand Fanda came from Super Universe One, you know, and So, I suspect that the differences that I can think of immediately are twofold. They mentioned that a little bit. There's some structural differences, like, say, the mansion worlds aren't, you know, a set of sub-satellites or even the set of satellites around the local system headquarters.
This is going through this whole paper, isn't it, right?
Yeah, so there's a few little kind of structural differences like that. And probably the reason there is some of those structural differences is the other reason I can think of off the top of my head. Because in a different super universe, the ascension scheme is not the dominant or primary scheme. One of the other six schemes is the primary scheme. As you ascend through one of those super universes, your experiences are just going to be fundamentally different. So some of the things they probably said about or kind of alluded to about what you learn where and how, see, that'll probably change some. You know, if your environment is significantly different that you're ascending through, you may learn some things early that we learn late, you know, and vice versa. So there may be it may mix up. But there must be, when all is said and done, there must be a commonality. Because you all come together into one core of the finality, independent of what super universe you came from. Okay, so see, it's probably just the order of acquiring the basic elements is different, and it's that sort of reflection that, you know, makes me wonder about this planet. See, too, and when we talk about future visitations of suns to this world, there's always the possibility that you could have beings come to this world in kind of a dispensational sort of a capacity, I guess you'd say, that are not part of kind of the normal scheme. Maybe they're more something that is kind of common over in another super universe. Maybe Michael of Nebanon, because he's already mixed it up here, Maybe if we knew how things, what the norm is in the second super universe, say, maybe we would go, that's looking kind of suspicious. Is he setting it up so that the sequence of events here is going to kind of go more like it does on the norm over in the second super universe by changing the order? You know, I mean,
can he do that?
He can do that, and there has to be some element of that. There has to be some element of overlap, because, like I've pointed out again with the schemes, it's not like only the ascension scheme is here. The other six schemes are here, but they're not dominant, and that's true with all seven. So, see, you know, that scheme that's dominant in the second super universe is also here. This super universe has to actualize its part of that scheme. Michael can certainly choose, see, perhaps, to bring in that other scheme more definitively here. I mean, you know, it's just a potential speculation. You know, it's a speculation, but it's a potentiality. That there may be, we may get to light and life by benefiting from some sun that's not revealed in here, like some Trinity sun, Trinity origin sun that's not revealed in here, for instance. That's going to be, you know, just a further sign of how unique this planet is. I mean, they use the word unique over and over and over again, talking about our world. There's so many things. See, so you just, you know, forget about the norm, you know, I think, you know, and just let your speculation run wild. There's all kinds of possibilities. You know, just the fact that apparently our planetary prince is going to be a Melchizedek, a modified Melchizedek, is way out of the norm. Okay. Right, and all, right, and it's that.
Managerial
son. So.
Magisterial son earlier than we think.
Right, there's that. I mean, see, now, an interesting thing about how it appears that, you know, some of these unrevealed suns here are probably other Trinity origin suns, you know, like the Trinity teacher's suns. A Melchizedek, you know, in terms of Gabriel and Father Melchizedek as being the first two sons of the Creator Son and the Creator Mother Spirit, Gabriel is a son more in the image of the Creator Son. The Father Melchizedek is a son more in the image of the Creative Mother Spirit. Just like you have Adam's son and Eve's son, okay? The same pattern. Okay, so if the Father Melchizedek and has all the Melchizedeks underneath him have this relationship to the Creative Mother Spirit, the mother comes from the Trinity, another Trinity son. See, maybe that matches it up. Maybe the fact that we're going to have a Melchizedek as a planetary prince, maybe that means that things are naturally going to sync up with some one of these unrevealed suns better. See, you can rationalize it without too much, you know, hand waving. You know?
They say Michael more depicts the mother than the
right, and then there's that, and right, there's that, and, you know, see, so there's a number of things that, you know. You can really wonder, you know, if this world might get a revelation of some of those others, or at least one of those other six schemes in the not-too-distant future. In other words, something that really definitively goes beyond what's revealed in this, you know, which is limited to the ascension scheme. And we might literally get a being that embodies one of those other schemes,
not revealed is the purpose beyond all of this great relationship that we're working for.
Mm-hmm.
We're evolving and we're ascending and we're gonna be all so nice to one another and everybody will, you know, you'll look right through and see mm-hmm. the truth and mm-hmm. all that. Mm-hmm. But where does this all go? I mean, we're living in a universe of matter. I think that it all works toward the beautification of
the physicalness of everything, as well as
sure.
the beautification of our relationships and the truth of, you know, and that's one of the things they haven't talked about is how we all need to eventually maybe become master architects and master gardeners in our own right for the ultimate working with matter to make it just, I mean, if you ever just have gone to some drop-dead gorgeous place like the Tetons, You stand there and you just have this completely different feeling about things.
Right. Why don't you get a lot of that sort of stuff revealed in here? Because this is just limited to the first half, to the ascension part. Where you're starting to do more of the power personality synthesis. That's what you're describing. Where it isn't all so on the biased on the personality side.
And
personal relationships. See, you don't hear them talking about that because the revelatory mandate doesn't allow them to talk about the second half, where more of that, where it starts to become more equal, the incredible patterns that are power, you know, on equal footing with the incredible patterns that are personality.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and beauty is patterned energy. That's what beauty is. You know, the aisle is the absolute reference point of beauty. You know, and in this revelation, the aisle, in large part, is just that place you're heading to. You don't talk much about its pattern and, you know, and its relationship to beauty and how you will synchronize with it. You know, you talk about synchronizing with the eternal sun, but they don't really talk about how you synchronize with the aisle. As much as you find the eternal sun as the personality absolute, you got to find the aisle as the absolute of pattern. See? And see, they don't talk about that because, see, that's the revelatory mandate didn't allow them to bring in the rest of the story. But you can recognize that. The aisle and the sun are equal, parallel phenomenon. So you're going to do it too. And obviously that brings in that whole second half of your universe career and the potential to eventually find God the Supreme that you're seeking throughout that whole second half. That's what you're doing is God the Supreme seeking, trying to bring what you initiated, that parallel relationship on the aisle, bringing that together. Yeah.
What she might have been referring to is our first stop as first stage spiritual beings, where we stop in it. And we learn manipulation and relationships between mind and matter. And we learn how to do, like what she's talking about, create beauty and goodness using mind and matter and the relationships between them. Mm-hmm. I always envisioned that as kind of like a trip to Hogwarts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, good point. Well taken. I mean, that the beginnings of that start on the minor sector. That's a very good point. That, that I actually should have emphasized that. I didn't think of it. That again, that's an unspoken part, but it's there. Once you get out of the local universe, the first thing you do is come into this very definitive relationship with the pattern side, you know, in contrast to the personality side. I mean, that's why they call it Ensa. I mean, what is Ens? I mean, that word means, innate beingness, fundamental beingness. I mean, at the minor sectoral level, you finally can get your feet firmly planted in reality in that purposed energy, begin to strike step with that purposed energy. And so it's an unspoken thing. About the only time that they kind of indirectly refer to that's going on all the time as well in parallel, is when they remind you that you are acquiring a relationship to the Almighty as you ascend. That's that kind of unspoken power side of the picture. And it's you're going to begin to bring that together in the second half of your career as a finaliter. Yeah. All right. Yep. One more thing here.
Just kind of a small thought. Mm-hmm. I was thinking how different it probably will be when we meet other mortals who've never known about or experienced war. Or have no idea what that's like.
Yeah, come from a world that's that, you know, that advanced, yeah. You know, now, of course, the immediate people you're going to meet are all basically from, you know, when you're in the local system, the worlds that are still ascending up through the mansion worlds are all kind of in similar ballpark to us. So none of them are going to be from worlds that were, you know, are way past war. You know, and every world has war. War is an indispensable part of the early evolution. So, but yeah, when you get to, you know, the constellation level, you're going to start.
Who come from light and life.
Yeah, you know, and definitely when you get to the local universe capital, you're going to start, you know, meeting beings that, you know, that grew up on a world that was, you know, way advanced, and yeah, and just they will be very fascinated to learn from you, you know, the value of war. Remember that, the title of that section, the value of war. Yeah. All right. Well, we. Oh my goodness, it's quite past time. All right. So we didn't get to paper 31. So we'll start right away there next time. Let's take a moment here.